Okay, welcome to the Opperman Report. I'm your host, Ed Opperman, private investigator, digital forensic investigator, blogger. Got the blog called The Opperman Report. We got a really great guest today. His name is Ole Demigod, and he's the author of Coup d'etat in Slow Motion. And you can find that book on his website, which is called lightonconspiracies.com. And that's light, like a flashlight, on conspiracies.com. And all that stuff, I have the link to his book and his website are all up on my blog, The Opperman Report, and you can find it all there. Ole's a fascinating guy. He's been doing research and investigations into these assassinations and conspiracies for about 30 years. And he's done some great work. I'm very familiar with his work, and most of the people who listen to this show are probably familiar with his work. Ole, how are you?
I'm very blessed, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Let me ask you a question. The first question I got for you is this. I've been listening to a lot of your interviews lately, and it seems like everyone who interviews you pronounces your name a different way. How do you pronounce your name correctly?
It's Ole Demigod.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Ole Demigod. Okay.
It's like if you change the A and guard with an O, Demigod, that's it.
Demigod. Okay. Ole.
There you go.
Demigod. Okay. I'm going to try, my friend.
Doesn't matter. Whatever with three letters, I will answer you.
There you go. Because you know how we Americans are. We're so arrogant. You know, we can't take the time to learn other people's cultures and other people's languages and stuff. So, Ole, tell us about... how do you want to get started? You want to tell us about your book? Because I know the book covers like 40 different assassinations and different cases, JFK, RFK, John Lennon, the Swedish assassination. Would you like to start there?
I could just give you a little bit of a background about myself and so on. I'm a former journalist, investigator, inventor, artist, musician, and so on. And the whole thing for me started in the early 1980s when it was the first time I saw the Zapruder film in a documentary, and that really shook me because that was the first time that I really started to understand that the official stories behind these assassinations might well be very, very wrong, even filled with lies. And so after I saw that, when I saw the headshot coming from the front right instead of from where they claimed it, that Oswald was sitting, I got very almost obsessed trying to find out what had really happened. So I read like, I think, a couple of hundred books about the JFK assassination. And one of the things that really confused me for a long time was that many of the people involved, in one book they were described as being part of the Chicago mob, maybe in another book they were being funded by the FBI, in a third book they were working for the CIA, and in another one they were working for some like Secret Service or the Dallas Police and so on. Very, very confusing, until I got to the point where I started to see that all of them were actually true, that the same person could be funded by the FBI, working for the CIA, connected with the mob, and so on and so on. And this is very important, I think, when you look at these assassinations and their different terror attacks and so on, to see that it's a multifaceted thing. There's no such thing as a good guy, bad guy type of the guys with a white hat are the good guys and the boogeymen have black hats. That's not the case. They're so intertangled and intertwined that when you talk about the CIA and the mob, I would say in many occasions they're two sides of the same coin and so on. And this is also how they've been working together for decades. So after I really got very deeply into the JFK assassination, I also started studying the Robert Kennedy assassination and the Martin Luther King and also Abraham Lincoln and all the way back to Julius Caesar. And it came to a point where it appeared to me that quite clearly that the powers behind these assassinations are following almost like a template, like a bullet list of how to commit these assassinations on a high level and how to get away with it, how to trick the normal population into thinking that it was the deed of a lone crazy guy instead of that it was actually a political assassination and an elimination of somebody they wanted to get rid of so that they could push forward their very brutal agenda. Then in 1986, the Swedish Prime Minister was shot down by a lone...
Before you get into that, okay, how old were you when you started getting into JFK?
I was in my 30s, I think.
Okay.
Something like that, 25, around there.
Okay, because you look very young now. Okay. Oh, so you're a budding 30s. You look good when you got started with JFK. Okay, and now also, too, you mentioned that you were an inventor. What have you invented?
I've invented a water saver that saves the water. You know, when you step into the shower and you put on the water and then you have to wait for a couple of minutes and brush your teeth before it gets warm.
Yeah.
It's a device that saves that water and recycles it. So that's the thing.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool. Okay. So then you got involved in the Swedish Prime Minister, I believe his name, Olof
Palme. Was his
Olof
name?
Palme. Okay, let's hear that story.
And no, up until that time, I thought, you know, I lived in Sweden. I thought it was there was no corruption. I thought the police were somebody you could trust. I thought the government was, super duper, and that we lived, we were being pumped with that we lived in the perfect country, the perfect democracy, and so on.
Yeah.
And that Olof Palme was a man of the people and so. Somebody who's standing up for all the right causes and so on. But what I found out after a while was that this assassination in Sweden, which was blamed on a lone crazy guy, started following the exact same template as the other big assassinations. And that I got very confused once again there, because I thought, how is this possible? I mean, how can it follow the same template if they're not connected? So I moved to Sweden. I went up to Stockholm right after the assassination and started working as a bus driver just to be able to be there on location. And I joined up with a small group of Swedish, mostly elderly men, who was very, very worried about the development in Sweden, especially after the assassination. And so on an early stage, I was part of this investigation, on the private side, sort of. And I met most of the witnesses, you know, I tracked down what turned out in the end to be foreign agents, and I met the Swedish local policemen who were involved in the assassination and international hitmen. It turned into like a real thriller type of thing, and in the end it actually got so bad that two of my friends got killed in, or murdered I would say, but in a quite a brutal way. And in the end I also left Sweden because I felt it was getting too close for me.
How long ago did you leave Sweden?
It was I left the year 2000.
Okay.
And now I live in Spain.
Now, one difference though between this Olof assassination is that the patsy who they arrested in that case, he was actually exonerated. He was found not guilty later on. He was retried and set free. No.
Yeah, but this was the first guy they tried to nail for the murder. There was a sabotage of the whole operation. It's a very, very complex assassination. It's on the same scale as the JFK. It looks very simple from the outside, but once you start digging into it, it's super complex. And there was two operations going on at the same time, and one of the operations were there to sabotage for the other. And that's what they did. Also, they interfered and got hold. They got the patsy that was prepared. They got him out of the way so that the whole operation failed. And that started a whole massive confused investigation. The whole thing turned upside down. And so it took them like a year or two to recuperate. And then in about 2 years after the assassination, they tried to nail this guy. Perfect patsy. He was an alcoholic with a violent background, and they got him sentenced, but for no, I mean, he was sentenced, he was totally innocent, and in the end he was let free, but then he was killed a few years later by the police.
Really?
an accident, they say, but
I didn't see that part, he got his skull cracked. Really? I didn't see that part. But I did see that basically the only evidence they had against him was the Prime Minister's wife ID'd him. Now, do you think she was she manipulated or just mistaken or in on it, or what do you think?
Ed, I tell you, I was on Red Eyes Radio. We spent 8 hours talking about this assassination, and it's such a complex thing. And so I don't want to go into that because there's very many very, very odd things around the Palmer family and the wife and her way of dealing with the whole thing, pointing out a totally innocent guy and so on. So if you want me on another time, we can spend like 2-3 hours, but only on that one, because otherwise it would just sound totally off the head, you know.
Obviously, I want you back another time, okay, because we're right on the same frequency here in so many different things. But now I just have one last question about the Swedish assassination there. Now, I believe I heard you on another show say that one of the witnesses, the eyewitnesses in that case, was also later on, he had taken prisoners or hostages in his home. And is that true?
I know what you mean. It's very strange because the guy that, in my opinion, the one they tried to nail for this, the patsy that they had prepared, his name was, they called him the crazy Austrian, Wilhelm Kram. But Wilhelm Kram was only an alias, and his real name was Josef Fritzl. And this Josef Fritzl was quite a few years later. He was involved in a massive scandal where it turned out that he had kept his own daughter as a prisoner in the basement for 17 years or something like that, and made her pregnant with 4 kids and, you know, absolutely absurd.
Right. Now, are you sure that's the same guy?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, really?
And it was the guy who points him out to start with was the first investigator of the who was also involved in the assassination itself in one of these operations. But this is if you tell these things to normal people in normal Swedes, they will just go, my God, you're off your rockers. But this is after 30 years that I've found out these things, so I don't take them lightly.
No, I don't take them lightly either, and I can appreciate it. But that part of the story is just so fascinating to me that Josef Fritzl, like you said, he had his daughter held hostage in his home, impregnated her, and even killed some of these children.
No, but I think that one of the reasons, as far as I've been able to understand why they picked him, was that they could blackmail him because they knew he had his daughter in the basement, you know,
gotcha.
So that he would take the fall and he would shut up. Because if he came out, it would get even worse for him. That is my theory. I have no idea why they picked this guy. There's some evidence showing that he was involved with the Mossad as well, delivering manufacturing passports for them and so on, as well. So I don't know. You know, when if anyone will know how complex, once you get into these networks of. It's so difficult to know what's going on. I mean, even the people who are involved themselves, they don't know either, because it's so compartmentalized and so on a need-to-know chain. It's so chopped up so that nobody knows the whole picture. Not even the people carrying out the assassinations. They often don't even know the real identity of the people they're killing and so on. So it's very chopped up.
I totally agree with you. But now my question is, what was Josef Fritzl's role? He was a witness? He was a shooter? What was his role in the assassination?
His role was to be picked up as a patsy. He was not aware of it, as far as I know. But they went to pick him up. And the thing was that when they went to grab him, there was another police car that had stopped him and was just asking him questions. This police car has never been identified as an official police car. Do you know? And then exactly in another spot of this of the town where the shooter, the real killer, jumped into a car and took off. They had parked in a small little one-way street just outside a restaurant called Karelia, and one of the escape cars takes off with the shooter. And 5 minutes later, this guy Josef Fritzl walks into that restaurant. How he managed to get there from the time just like a few minutes earlier when he was stopped by this unofficial police car to there, it is my guess is that police car stopped him, crashed the other operation, sabotaged it, and then took him as fast as possible to that restaurant to even screw it up even more.
Oh yeah, you're right.
I think he had absolutely no idea. A bit like Lee Harvey Oswald, he was just told, you go to that cinema and meet up the controller. The same thing here. He was waiting for someone, maybe waiting for a phone call or something like that, and not knowing that he was the one who was going to be blamed for the whole thing.
Just fascinating. Just fascinating.
This is the thing. It's when you start studying these assassinations, not one by one, but when you start studying them like all of them, you will soon see that there's a very clear way that how these things are carried out. So I can even give you, if you want down the way, I can give you like an example how they do it, how they, the different bullet points and what is involved in carrying out one of these things.
I definitely do. But a question I have for you is, because when I see someone like this, this Joseph Fritzl character, who seems to be like a serial killer type, deviant type, okay, with a person of evil intentions, who's not like a working workman type assassin who's working for the CIA or even the mafia, who's just like a soldier type, a mercenary type. This guy's a deviant type, okay? And we see these people pop up in other assassinations as well, and now I've noticed that there's a connection to a satanic cult called the Process Church of the Final Judgment. Have you ever seen this thread of the Process?
No.
You haven't?
No, I haven't. I heard of these things, and I know that once you get up a bit, I've been mostly studying on the street level, you know, how it's carried out, who are doing it, and so on. But when you get up in the hierarchy, in the power pyramid, the higher up you get, the more these weird rituals and satanic things and things going on there is.
Right. I've heard previous interviews with you, and I agree with you again, the Council on Foreign Relations, Trial Commission, and the Bilderbergs. And it seems to me, I'm about your age, too. I'm 51 years old. And I've been researching JFK and these assassinations, these type of things, about the same amount of time that you have, I believe. How old are you?
I'm 55.
Yeah, 55. Well, there you go. Okay. but one element that I've noticed is this. From my American point of view, is this the satanic group that's been involved in the Manson slayings, I believe involved in the John Lennon assassination, and the Atlanta child murders, the Son of Sam murders. Are you familiar with the Son of Sam case in New York City?
Yeah.
Okay, right, and these serial killings. Okay, and I've seen that they have a connection too. And when I see something like this guy, Joseph Fritzl, like you were talking about, and his involvement in this, it just caught my attention right away.
I can only say that one of the things they do when they choose patsies is they need to work well in media. They need to look strange. They need to look violent. They need to look weird, and they need to, you know, say things or have a violent background or so on to fit into, so that the population will think, ooh, that's a bad guy, and he looks the thing, you know, he looks strange. And but it's so easy to say afterwards, once it was discovered that he had kept his daughter there. But I know, as far as I know, his normal neighbors, he just saw him as a very quiet old man that never bothered anyone.
Right, and it did appear that he had some kind of a conscience, because after he saw his daughter in the courtroom, the next day he went and pled guilty and put an end to the trial. So who knows?
No, of course, he's a human being. I mean...
Right.
I don't know. Sometimes, especially in these areas, there's so many confused people. I mean, they believe that they're doing the right thing. Many of them think they're freedom fighters, when in the real, if I look at them, I would say they're real terrorists. You know, I can't see what there is when a freedom fighter says that they blew up a passenger plane because they were freedom fighters. I call that real terrorism and so on. So. There's a lot of confused people in that area, I would say.
So now, when you were there in Sweden, okay, and there's no way we're going to be able to get into all the details of the Sweden assassination, but you were saying how you met some of the police officers involved, because there was a theory of a right-wing conspiracy with the police officers over there. So now, Do you believe you've met some of the actual shooters?
Yeah, not the shooters. There was only one shooter. I have not met the shooter, but I have met people who were involved in the assassination itself. I lived very close to one of them, and that was a very scary experience because they have a way of dealing with people when you keep digging too deep for the truth. There's a very violent way of dealing with people like myself. So I was quite paranoid and scared there for a while.
And ultimately, you had to leave the country. Do you feel safe there in Spain right now?
Yeah, I feel so far so good.
Okay. All right. Now, what kind of similarities did you find as far as people involved in this assassination, this conspiracy over there in Sweden, to the JFK case?
If I can go back in history, because there's one thing that I found that are connecting the dots between so many of these big events. In the late 1950s and early 1960s, President Dwight Eisenhower gave his president Richard Nixon the task of forming a group of assassins, highly skilled killers that they could be used on an international level or whatever, whoever was a problem for the people in power. And the result of this was a group called Operation 40. This group consisted of exiled Cubans and high-ranking CIA operatives. Some of the CIA operatives were Ted Shackley, who was very, very high up and a key person in many, many, many. They all are in many of these assassinations all over the place. E. Howard Hunt, I mean, I'm sure your listeners know him from the JFK and Watergate scandal and so on.
Oh, yeah.
You also had David Attlee Phillips, who was later in his career, he was the chief of the Western Hemisphere, way up there. And he was also the controller of Lee Harvey Oswald. He was the guy who painted him black, making him become the patsy. He was also the controller of James Files, who was, in my opinion, one of the shooters, the one behind the picket fence just by the tree. And he was also the controller of a man called Michael Vernon Townley, who was not present in Dealey Plaza at that day, but he was very close to Operation 40 and involved in super many of these assassinations on a global scale before. This Michael Vernon Townley was one of the tasks in the early 1970s was that he was sent to Chile, and he was part of overthrowing Salvador Allende, the president down there. After that, he was deeply involved in Operation Condor, where they tracked down supporters of Allende and killed them globally. And he was also part of blowing up Orlando Letier in Washington, D.C. I don't know if you remember that. There was a big car bomb where Chilean former politician Orlando Letier was blown up together with a woman called Ronnie Moffitt. The guy who supplied the bomb was Orlando Bosch, who was present in Dealey Plaza 1963. He was also he committed like hundreds and hundreds of bombings all over the place, was put away for years, and then pardoned by George Herbert Walker Bush Sr. This George Bush Sr., I know you're very aware of this guy because he pops up everywhere. This family is central in everything when it comes to these things. And when Operation 40 was created, the guy that was put there to take care of the funding was George Herbert Walker Bush. His right hand in this was a man called Felix Rodriguez. Felix Rodriguez was later the guy who was given the task to track down Che Guevara in Bolivia, and which he did. And he was also very central in the whole Iran-Contra scandal, working very close to Oliver North. The man that killed Che Guevara was another person from Operation 40. His name was David Morales, and he was the one who shot and killed Che Guevara. But he was also present in Dealey Plaza when he didn't do any shooting, but he was there and part of the whole operation. And he was also at the Ambassador Hotel when Robert Kennedy was killed that very evening. When he was there, he was at that time, he was the JM Wave chief of operation. And there were two other CIA operatives that was being observed there. It was the chief of maritime operation, Gordon Campbell, and the chief of psychological warfare operation, George Ioannidis. I mean, what were these high-ranking, super involved people involved with assassinations doing at both these places? You know, let's get back to, is it okay if I just ramble on with some names and connections?
Oh, no, yeah, excellent. But the thing is, we're getting down to the break almost. We have about a minute toward the break. So okay. I just want to remind everybody that we're with Ole Demogord. Did I do that right?
You did it perfectly. My mother would have been proud of you.
Okay, thank you, my friend. Author of Coup d'Etat in Slow Motion, and you can find the book on his website, which is called LightOnConspiracies.com. But if you just Google Ole Demogord, D-E-M-M-E-G-A-R-D, his website comes up right away. And he's been doing this research for 30 years, and he's doing this full time. And he's seeking donations. There's a donate button on his website where people can donate to support this research. Okay, welcome back to the Opperman Report. I'm your host, Ed Opperman. Private investigator, digital forensic investigator, blogger, author of the book How to Succeed as a Private Investigator, which you can find on my website, emailrevealer.com. We have with us today, our guest is Ole Demogord, author of Coup d'Etat in Slow Motion. You can find his book on lightonconspiracies.com. Also, if you go to YouTube, he has a YouTube channel called Ole Demogord, and he has all kind of videos up there, stuff about Jimi Hendrix and stuff like that. So there's a lot of information. He's been doing 30 years of research into these kind of conspiracies and assassinations and stuff like that. His website is supported by donations, so if you could visit lightonconspiracies.com and hit the donate button over there, that would be appreciated to keep Ole's research and his work going. I just want to remind you that we're on Revolution Radio, which is a listener-sponsored station. We have no corporate sponsors, so if you want to support our station, you visit freedomslips.com and you click on the donate button. So now, Ole, are you there?
I sure am.
Okay. Now, we were talking about JFK and about how these same assassins are the same guys over and over. They're the same guys down in Chile. They're the same guys at the Bay of Pigs. They're the same guys going after Che Guevara. They're the same guys over and over. The same guys at JFK and Watergate. Now, when I was in high school, I had a friend named A.J. Weberman who wrote the book called Coup d'Etat in America. Are you familiar with that book? Ole?
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the book Coup d'Etat in America?
No.
Okay, well, that was the book. This is the first book, came out in 1977. Written by A.J. Weberman, that pointed out that the three tramps at Dealey Plaza were the Watergate burglars. Howard Hunt and all those guys.
But that is not true, though.
Oh, really? What do you got, then?
No, the tramps were Chauncey Holt, is the old guy. It wasn't E. Howard Hunt, what many people thought. Chauncey Holt, he was the guy, CIA operative, and also involved with the mob. He was the guy who supplied all the people there with false identifications, secret service badges, and so on that day. Then the middle guy, his name was Charles Harrelson. He was a hit guy from the Chicago mob. He's also the father of Woody Harrelson, the actor.
Yeah.
Exactly. Cheers. Yeah. And then the first guy in the row, the guy that walks in front, his name was Charles Frederick Rogers. He was with the ONI and also connected to the CIA. He is also has also connections with the Martin Luther King assassinations. But these three people were there that day. I mean, the Dealey Plaza on the 22nd of November that day was just packed with people of assassins from all over the place. It was like incredible. Lots of these people weren't even involved, but they were still there. I think almost like, do you know, if there's a big rock concert, like if Bruce Springsteen comes to town or something like that, then all the musicians come there as well. And I think there must have been a little bit like that. Everybody wanted to be there, because when you look at it from above, they're just all over the place.
Yeah, there's even a picture of a young George Bush there standing, leaning up against the wall.
George Bush Sr., like I said, he was the guy who was taking care of the money, funding this group. And there's now quite clear evidence that he was actually in the Deltex building when the shots were fired. The shooter in that room were Chucky Nicoletti, a hit guy from the Chicago mob. The spotter in that was, his name was Néstor Izquierdo. He was closely connected to Operation 40 as well, an exiled Cuban. There's a statue of him in Miami, by the way. And then there was Johnny Rosselli. That was the guy, the connection guy between the Chicago mob and the CIA. These four people were in the room in the Deltex building when these shots were fired. I mean, there were lots of other shooters as well, but George Bush was there for sure. And he was the guy that was taken by the police when they came out, and then they tried to defuse that by later saying that it was another guy that had taken. It was another mob guy who also was connected with oil that they sort of confused the whole thing with. So, no, he's there for sure. This guy is everywhere when it comes to assassinations on a global scale.
Which one, Bush or?
Bush.
Yeah. Now, what about Adnan Khashoggi? He's been involved in a lot of this stuff as well, in Iran-Contra, a lot of these different events too, and even with Princess Diana, he was related to Dodi Fayed's father. What do you have with his connections into everything?
Not so much, so I only speak about the things I know. I don't know enough to say anything about him.
So you haven't looked into him?
No, not so. I mean, I've popped into his name several times, but I haven't looked into it deeply, no.
Okay. Okay, so what else do you have to say about JFK?
Oh, I can go on for hours. But one of the things that I find so interesting is these connections between the different assassinations. So I would like to just continue describing some of the people in Operation 40 and their different where they popped up as well.
Okay, great.
Like, for instance, you have, like I said, Michael Vernon Townley, who was down in Chile. He was part of Operation Condor. And also he was part of killing, it was a very big political assassination in South Africa, where he was together with other people from Operation 40. They killed a man by the name of Robert Smith and his wife. This Michael Vernon Townley was also the one who murdered the Nobel Prize winning poet Pablo Neruda in Chile, also just after the assassination of the overtake of Salvador Allende. But he was also given the task by David Attlee Phillips, if you remember David Attlee Phillips, the controller of Lee Harvey Oswald and James Files. They had the same controller, and he gave Michael Vernon Townley the task of putting together two groups that could be used in Operation Condor. And two of the members in one of these groups was Roberto Tieme, an Argentinian assassin, and also Julio Izquierdo, these two. And on the night, 23 years later, in Stockholm, when the Swedish Prime Minister was taken out, these three people were present. I mean, coincidence or not, I think that is quite remarkable. Then you have other directions. You know the Umbrella Man, yeah?
Sure.
The guy in Dealey Plaza. And in my opinion, he was there to mark the point where everybody should start shooting, because they couldn't have that all the different shooters started firing all over the place, because then it would be impossible to blame it on just one patsy. So they needed everybody to fire at the same time from the different directions. So he was the guy put there just to mark the point, here is where we start shooting. That's why he had the umbrella, so that everybody could see that. His As far as I know, his name was Roy Hargraves. He was also very closely connected to Operation 40 and Mercenary and so-called Freedom Fighter. And the guy in front of him, who's a dark-skinned Cuban, he's mentioned or named as the waving guy. He's standing waving in front of him. As far as I've been able to find out, his name was Felipe Vidal Santiago. He was also part of Operation 40. And he went under the alias of Charles Morgan for many years. He was working for a company called IT, but his main task, he was both in Africa and South America and so on, and his main task was to recruit new assassins. And he was present in Stockholm just a few months before the assassinations, trying to hire Swedish assassins to take care of the assassination of Olof Palme. So you got direct personal contact, you know, people that were actually present in Dealey Plaza, who was also in Stockholm, 1986.
How did the government change it in Sweden? From the left to the right? Sorry?
Well, we're talking about the template, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's because the recall, my coup d'etat in slow motion, was that I think that just like in the States, when they took out Kennedy, I truly believe that was a coup d'etat, and that the people who killed him are still in power. The same power elite that took him out are still to this day in power. This is why it's so important to reveal what is going on, because if this had just been a murder in the early 1960s, I mean, big deal. But it's so important because it is affecting our lives so dramatically to this very day. And you ask about Sweden, what happened? It went from a very left wing to now it's very right wing. You know, it's becoming quite a militant country, and it's very sad to see the development. I also find that it feels like the global elite are using Sweden as a test range, you know, where they can do technique things, because the Swedish people are very afraid of conflict. So
right.
they try out things there. Now they're trying, they're trying to push the whole society into a digital currency society where there's no cash anymore. And in Sweden, the cash money has almost disappeared. And they're trying it out there to see if they have riots or uprisings or anything like that, or if they can get away with it. If they get away with it in Sweden, then they will use that to go to the next country and so on and move it forward.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good for us at all.
No, my God, that is very scary if that happens.
And it just gives them too much control.
Yeah.
Okay, now, the reason why I first went looking for you to bring you on as a guest, I've done two shows in a row about the John Lennon assassination, because December 8th is the anniversary, so we did a couple of shows about that. What do you have? Because you're right, it all fits in together, because even all the connections between, again, Bush's motivation and the Hinckley attempted assassination against Reagan, and then Mark David Chapman. So what do you have to share with us in those areas?
Well, I think that Lenin assassination followed the template very, very closely. You have the lone patsy, and then you have a highly skilled assassins. The doorman that evening was named by José Perdomo. I am sure many of you have heard of him.
Sure.
He was officially a former CIA employee, and he was the guy who was, as I say, he was working as a doorman that evening. He was also the guy who took away the gun from Chapman and so on. But this José Perdomo was, for 10 years almost, he was one of the highest ranking officers in Operation 40. So what are the chances? Once again, we're back to this same group of assassins. And I heard an interview once with one of the guys who turned a whistleblower, and he was given the question, but why on earth did they use the same people all the time? And he said, but why change a winning team? They were doing great. Why change it?
Oh, I totally agree. It's like anything else. You hire people who you know can get the job done. And
yeah,
that are going to complete the work.
Yeah, these guys were good.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind as far as that goes. Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah, there's so much with the John Lennon assassination, and it's just it's fascinating, again. But what do you think the motivation was for going after Lennon?
There's two ways of seeing it. There's either that he was a peace figure, you understand. They have this problem with people that stands up and speaks out for truth and peace and this. Do you know, like Lady Diana, Martin Luther King, JFK as well in many ways, Mahatma Gandhi, John Lennon, Bob Marley, these type of people who really stands up and stands for peace. When people start listening to them in the millions, they become a major problem, and that is why they, in my opinion, they've been taken out. And here, John Lennon, he was just about to do his big comeback after quite a few years in more or less silence, and he was arranging for this big peace tour and so on. So that is one aspect that could be the reason why they took him out. The other one is quite a controversial theory that I don't know, I can just put it forward, that there is quite a lot of evidence showing that the Beatles is some kind of a creation, a Tavistock creation, that was actually, like, you know, nowadays they can make, almost like in a factory make boy bands,
right?
That they put together this group. They sent them off to Hamburg, but in Hamburg, instead of playing in nightclubs, they were drilled and formed into what they were to become later on. And then the whole hysteria, the Beatle history or whatever you call it, hysteria, was actually paid for. They started paying young people to do the screaming. Do you know, because, like, for instance, when they went to the States the first time, no one had heard of them, absolutely no one, and still they were met by all these thousands of teenagers screaming their head off. Some ex-operators have come forward and spoken how this was created, how the songs were not written by them, but by very skilled musicians, and that the whole idea was to bring forward a group to get destabilize society. This is one of the things they want all the time, to destabilize, get the countries weak and out of control. And if you see the development from what happened around the Beatles, I mean, they came out in 1963 and sang She Loves You, Yeah, 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 and people were horrified about their haircut, which was like nothing. And then just a few years down the line, where the whole country were onto LSD and flower power and listening to all kinds of it was a massive difference made to society in just 5-6 years, where this group was very central. And
I just had a guest on the other night, Mac White, and he pointed out that the Beatles came to the Ed Sullivan Show a very short time after the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is all, you know, diversion is one of the main tools they use. They have different tools. They got the problem reaction solution, but also diversion. When they need to get people's attention away from something that is about to be exposed, they need to create something big, like a bomb or a war or something to make, or scandal, to look the other way, look the other way. Like Monica Lewinsky or something like that, look the other way and keep them looking there. And according to these MI6 operatives, they say that this was a creation to divert attention away from the Kennedy. It was just a few months after the assassination that the whole thing just took off big time. And there is, if I continue on this track, I'm not saying that this is true, just presenting what I found out. In 1966, there's quite a lot of evidence showing that Paul McCartney died in a car accident, and that if you look, there's loads of it on YouTube and so on about this whole thing. They call him Fall instead of Paul.
Sure, we're very familiar with that. My audience is extremely familiar with that.
Okay, that's great to hear, because many people just shake their head when I talk about it. But actually, when you start checking out his the new guy, his features, you know, some things you cannot change, like the diameter of your skull or the distance between your eyes and so on. And these guys have not got the same measurements at all. And the eye colors doesn't match. And so they tried to fix the teeth, and they've tried to do this and that and so on. But the whole question is, why on earth would anyone put such an effort into putting a double into a group like that? Because, I mean, we're talking about a major cover-up and so on. And it is said that when there was this quarrel in the Abbey studio one night, and Paul just rushed out. It was a late November night, and drove off because he was pissed off with John. And then there was this girl who we picked up, and who, when she saw that it was actually Paul McCartney driving, she went totally crazy and started screaming and pulling his hair and so on, and that made him lose control over the car. So he drove off the car and died. She survived, but he died. Anyway, it said that the group was approached by the MI6 or MI5 that night, and that they were taken into a meeting where they said that we need to find a way of keep the group alive, otherwise it will cause mass suicides by young girls and so on. But I've never seen that MI5 or MI6 or the CIA would care very much about teenage girls or something like that. There's always a totally different agenda behind it. And I would say that it's much more likely that the agenda was this whole thing with destabilizing society. This was in 1966, and they were only halfway down the line. So what they did was they put in a double. He had all these operations, and it was an American guy as far as I know. After that, it came to a point, I mean, this kept on for quite a few years, and both George Harrison and John Lennon were not very fond of this new guy, and they claim also that John, in many of the lyrics, he was giving out these leads saying that Paul is fake, Paul is fake, Paul is fake, you know, trying to, that if it would be discovered, that he would have his hands free, you know, and say, well, I tried to tell you, but I couldn't. Anyway, also in many of the later interviews, you will hear George Harrison, for instance, he keeps referring to Fall, not Paul, but Fall. And George Harrison is said to have had a phone call from John Lennon just about a week before his assassination, where John said that, listen, I've had enough, I'm going to go out, it is enough now, I'm going to go out publicly with this. And then, boom, a week later he was killed. Then a few years later, I think it was, I can't remember how many years later, then George Harrison was always assassinated as well. There was this guy who managed to break into his super safe big villa and stabbed him, I think, like three times really, really seriously. So he was very close to dying. And then he wanted to go out with his story. And there is a so-called documentary out there now about this whole thing. And then, of course, George Harrison died of cancer, which cancer is one of these other things. If you don't die a violent way, then you die of cancer. So I don't know.
Which it did to Bob Marley.
Bob Marley is another one. If you want to go into Bob Marley, that is connected to Operation 40 as well, if you want to hear my version.
I'm very familiar with the Bob Marley story too, but you know, a couple of things with the Beatles and with the switch out. I believe there was a swap out of Paul, definitely. But again, I believe there's a connection to the Process Church again and the satanic cult. It's an offshoot of Scientology. A couple of things. Did you know that the art exhibit, the art gallery and the exhibit where John met Yoko, was an art gallery and an exhibit that was owned and sponsored by the Process Church? And
I don't know about these things, so
it's all brand new to you,
prefer
huh?
being quiet and just listen and learn.
Okay, well, yeah. Well, if it's all brand new to you, it's something you really got to look into. And I'll send you some information so that we're not, or maybe we can do a future show on just all of that. But why don't you get, again, too, now you talk about Bob Marley and being the son of a CIA director who gave him the gift of the boot. I know that story. But again, too, he was a neighbor of Simpson, Nicole Simpson. Were you aware
Nicole
of that?
Simpson.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was. He both Carl Colby and his wife gave testimony in the O.J. Simpson case. So, and that makes me put a big question mark around that, because it's such a strange criminal case anyway, the O.J. Simpson. I haven't really really got into the depth, but there's one thing with many of these very strange cases, and that is that they happen in California, in Los Angeles. And I think that is... the police there is extremely corrupt, and that they have the connections where they can cover these things up.
Yeah, we have a break coming up early, as a matter of fact, for some kind of technical reason. But we'll be back with Oli Damagord, Light on Conspiracy. This is his website. Okay, welcome back to the Opperman Report. I'm your host, Ed Opperman, and we're back here with our guest, Oli Damagord, who is the author of Coup d'etat in slow motion. Oli's been researching and investigating for 30 years on JFK and RFK, John Lennon, Princess Di. This assassination took place in Sweden of the Prime Minister. Incredible stuff. You can find all this on his website, lightonconspiracies.com. He also has a YouTube channel with all kinds of reports that he does on there that are really incredible. You really got to spend a whole day and a whole week, really, and catch everything he's up to. Where did we leave off?
I'm not really sure. I think we were talking about Bob Marley.
No, well, before that, we were talking about John Lennon and O.J. Simpson, but it's all so connected, you know, all these things, because like you said, it's all the same people, the same motives behind it. One question I wanted to ask you, though, is are you familiar with, like, MKUltra and trauma mind control?
Yeah.
Okay, because doesn't it seem like a lot of these big events, like the assassination of JFK, was to create this trauma, a national trauma in us? And then that was followed up by the Beatlemania hysteria.
I think with the JFK, it was a pure coup d'etat, just like I said, a coup d'etat, a violent takeover of power. The reason, there were many reasons why they wanted JFK out of the way, because, I'm sure your listeners know most of them, but there was a lot of people that were very, very pissed off and were very afraid of him being reelected, so they needed him out by then. But I think there was a very distinct reason why he was taken out the way he was done as well, because it would have been very, very, very easy to just slip a pill in his coffee or something like that and create a heart attack or poison him or whatever. But I think the reason why he was shot in open daylight in front of lots of cameras and people and all of this, it was to send a message out into the corridors of power saying that we can take out anyone at any time, anywhere, to create a shock of fear, which is also was also followed by this almost like a secondary conspiracy of silence, which is standard also when it comes to these big political assassinations. They're almost always followed by this silence from the official point of view. Just silence. It's the official story. That's the only thing that is valid. And everything else is just silence, cover up, and that's it.
Yeah, it does seem like there's an element to it where it has to be in our face. And we have to know what they're doing.
They set you an example on a regular basis. When they feel that things are getting out of order, they do another one just to shake things up and get the people back in line.
Oh, boy. Okay, now, how do you think... it's depressing.
It is. You know? It is.
When you start getting into this stuff, you can
but
really...
But I tell you, I think it's really, yeah. I feel super optimistic as at the same time, because I used to think that the whole world was crazy and it was such a violent place and there were so many crazy, awful things going on. But the more I get into these conspiracies, the more I track them down to the same global group again and again and again and again. And I've come to a point where I don't really think there is such a thing as a real terrorist. You know, it's every single time it's a false flag operation or a staged event, or the same people behind it, the same people funding or training or delivering bombs to them or whatever. So I feel the day that these guys sees that the game is over, that it's time to drop it because we're not buying it anymore, that day the world would turn into this absolutely super beautiful place, the place it's supposed to be.
You know what? Okay, good. You cheered me up because you're right. It is a small group of people behind this, an extremely small group of people.
It's maybe a couple of thousand, and we're like 7 billion, so it's an absolute joke that we're letting them control us. And this is the mad thing about the whole thing, is that we are actually doing it to ourselves. It is absolutely so stupid. So it's like, who is doing who to what? I mean, we're just as guilty by controlling each other and by just following their sick agenda.
Okay, now why do you think that is? Or are we just brainwashed, hypnotized, mind control? Why can't we rise up and kick their asses and take this world back from this small group that's in control?
For one, there's that courage. And for another thing, that we've been duped for so many years. I mean, they've been very, very efficient when it comes to mind controlling and just duping us with all this media and TV and program, just pushing all this fear upon us, fear, 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 to get us down, 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 so that we're more easily controlled. And also, like, I think it was Goebbels, Hitler's advisor, who said, or it was Hitler himself, I'm not sure, but the bigger the lie, the easier it is to get people to believe it. And I mean, once you get into this area, what these people have done is absolutely mind-blowing on the scale that these people have been involved. So normal people they can't take it in, because it's just like, it's too incredible. It sounds like a silly fairy tale, but it really is the facts.
Yeah, because it's not just the same small group of people that are behind the death of Princess Diana and the death of John Lennon and the death of Jeff. They're also involved in international drug dealing, drug smuggling. Even I heard you on another show, too, you were talking about the connections of Bill Clinton to Bush at the Menor Arkansas airport down there, with all that drug smuggling that went on through the whole Iran-Contra situation. So it's a small group that's behind just about everything that's harming the world nowadays.
I tell you, they've centralized the power for so many decades. They worked so hard to centralize it. So this today, it is, like you say, it's a small, small, very united group. And even though they look very sophisticated and nice on TV, I tell you, we are dealing with super, super, super criminal people. Absolute super criminals. So when you see George Bush on TV, or Bill Clinton, or Hillary, or whoever, Obama is now the front figure for this group, you should change the, you know, like, it's called democracy, it should be called super dictatorship or fascism, or it's, they give you all these fancy names, but if you just change the names, Homeland Security, it should be Homeland Terror, and Operation Freedom, it should be Operation Absolute Total Slavery. And so, you know, that just by changing the words, you will be able to see what's going on, because this is, we're being duped.
And so now, how do you think we can resist and work together to overcome this kind of oppression?
One thing is, I know for sure that violence is not the way to go. And I always emphasize that I am not here to spread fear or anything like that. On the contrary, it is by following the Mahatma Gandhi way, the non-violence, truthfulness, non-greed, these beautiful ethic morals, this is the way to go. Because if we fight them back with violence, we're doomed to lose, because that would only give them even more reason to hit back with even more force than they're doing at the moment. But I think the major thing is to just wake up, because it's just like if you have a magician and he's showing you a trick and you're saying, oh my God, that is pure magic. How on earth did he do it? Once you understand that the trick is not done with the left hand, but he's actually doing it with the right hand that is behind his back, once you see how it's done, you don't buy into it anymore. And it's the same with these false flag operation and all of these things that is going on at the moment. When people start seeing that, whoa, I'm not buying this lone patsy again. I'm not buying this mass shooting that is absolutely staged. I'm not buying into this. I'm not going to let you scare me anymore. It will slowly stop, you know. And this is, I feel super optimistic, because for so many years, I mean, I've been walking this road for some 30 years, and it's been a very lone and scary road. But now there's such an awakening going on. People are just, it's come to such an extreme level that you can't be asleep anymore, you know. Even if you're like, your head is made of concrete, most people are starting to see that something very strange is going on. And then when you just serve them the few little bits that will explain the jigsaw, boom, it falls into place right away. So
yeah, I think most people nowadays can look back and say, okay, JFK was a conspiracy because it was so obvious. But then as it starts getting closer to the present, like I think far less people are willing to say that September 11th was a pre-planned conspiracy action. And then even less and less people are willing to recognize these issues, like you said, like the Boston bombing, when there's just the Boston Marathon bombing, the FBI agents were thrown out of the helicopter. You know, the guy surrendered on TV with no wounds, and then they're telling us he was shot in the throat a couple of days later. So it seems that we're able to accept that it happened 50 years ago, but that, well, no, not today. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying, Ed. To me, this is like, how thick can you be? I mean, how thick can you be? There's no excuses anymore. We're 50 years down the line, and people are still asking, was it Lee Harvey Oswald or was it not? I mean, come on, folks. It's time to wake up. There's no excuse for being totally brain dead anymore. 9/11, you have Pentagon, a plane that goes in there, massive big plane that disappears into a small little hole the size of a hole from a missile. No plane parts, no nothing. And the official explanation is it vaporized because of the massive heat. I mean, come on. There's no time for this anymore. It's on such a ridiculous level that it's by waking up, by not waking up, we let this whole thing continue. And the result of us letting it continue is all these wars created where innocent people are being killed on a daily basis because we're letting these criminals rule and steer. It's time to wake up. It's time to stop this madness, and it's time to heal the world with love, not ignorance. So I would say, normally I talk directly to people in uniform, the police. I speak directly to the elite as well. And I'd be happy to do this on your show as well if you want, because I just think it's time to wake up.
Yeah. Well, definitely. Yeah. Continue. What did you want to speak on to?
Okay. I would like to speak out to people in uniform.
Okay, good. Okay.
May it be soldiers, may it be police officers, security people, SWAT teams, whatever. Please, I ask you from the bottom of my heart, inform yourself. Inform yourself about whose agenda you are serving. You are helping to control us, the rest, your own people. You're terrorizing your own people for somebody else's greed, for somebody else's agenda, and these people don't even care about you. You're just empty uniforms to them. As soon as you don't serve that purpose, you are out. So please, if you're a police officer and so on, you might feel very powerful with a nice suit and a big gun and so on. It's not real power. The power lies in truthfulness, bravery, courage to stand up for what is right, and not just follow like a coward because of financial benefits or whatever. I can understand that, but this is, we're at a point now in history where there's no more excuses. You know, history will not look back with mild eyes on these type of deeds. When it comes to soldiers, it's so much more tragic, because I think so many soldiers signs up because they think they're going to go out there and they're going to protect and serve for freedom, and that they will do, you know, fight for democracy and liberate people and so on. The thing is, you are there as brutal enforcers, killing, slaughtering innocent people because of oil, because of drugs, because of pedophile gangs, because of weapon smuggery, by the same elite who once again could not give a shit about you. You are just a powerful tool that they will use and get rid of as soon as you're not efficient or useful for them anymore. So please inform yourself about what's going on and then get out, because it is your soul. It is your soul that will be soiled with the blood from these innocent victims. It is you who have to live with what you have done in the name of somebody else's greed. It's absolute madness. So I say, yeah, please, yeah, inform yourself.
You know, Oli, see, the thing is, I come from New York City, okay, and I have a background of a lot of my friends were New York City cops. My partner in this PI business that I have now, he was NYPD Harbor Aviation in New York City. He was a scuba cop and a helicopter cop in New York City. And he was actually there at 9/11. And he was there. He was his guys were the guys who dove down into the water and picked up the debris from Flight 800. So as I know these guys that you're talking about, and they are, they're good people. You know, they're good-hearted people. They don't want to oppress anybody else. They want to do what's right. But these guys have a fear. There's a brainwashing that goes on in their life. They don't want to lose their pension. They don't want to lose their job. They don't want the hammer of the government coming down on them. They have a fear that they're afraid to stand up to the powers. So there's a brainwashing and manipulation on these guys that I think goes on even to a higher level that goes on to the general public.
I totally agree with you. It's fear is controlling, and this is why they keep pumping us with fear all the time to be able to control us. And that is where I say it takes courage, but if you will know in your heart what is the right thing to do. You will know. And also, I'm not saying you should not become a cop, or stop being, like we're talking about the cops. I say, yeah, do what this whole point was to start with. You're there to protect the population. You're there to be an honest, decent, not take bribes, and not commit violent acts against the normal people. Just be a super duper great cop, and you will be perfect.
Yeah, I hear you. See, the thing is, I think the guys like you and guys like me, we can look at a situation from the mind of an investigator, and you can look at the building at the Pentagon and see that small little hole, and just think, how could a big giant plane fit through that little tiny hole? Whereas a lot of people don't have that kind of critical, logical thinking, you know, and they want someone else to figure out it for them and be told what to think. Now, as long as this elite group have control over the media, how can we turn that around? Because as long as the media is in their pocket and telling the mass public that, yeah, okay, don't believe what your eyes tell you, but believe what we tell you, like, how can we turn that around?
There's a button on that box, you know, and it says off. It says off. You know, it's called TV programs, like programming. It's not by coincidence. It is through that box that they control us. So one very good first step would be turn off the box, start looking around, see, maybe, my God, I've got a family, I've got a beautiful wife and kids. Maybe we should start talking to each other and get to know each other instead of spending the whole time in front of this box when it's causing so much damage. You know?
I totally agree with you. Let me ask you a question now, too, because I know what kind of yoga do you do?
Raja Yoga, that's science for the mind.
Okay, yeah, I was into Bikram yoga for a long time. But unfortunately, I've gotten out of shape. I'm not
I'm stiff like a log as well. I'm doing the mind one.
Okay. Now, you had mentioned, too, about these pedophile organizations. What do you have on that?
No, it's like when you were talking about...
That seems to be an element as well. There's always, with this group as well, there always seems to be the pedophilia with this bunch as well.
I totally agree with you. It's like when you look into these things, these assassinations and these conspiracies, it's almost like they, if you look upon it on an energy level, it's almost like they despise the female energy and that there's a lot of homosexuality going on. I'm not saying anything bad about normal homosexual gay people, but it's like there's among these Nazi, very militant, violent people, there's also a lot of sexual interaction there. And then it goes for kids. I have no idea why they do it, but I just see that they do it. And many, many of these children that disappears, unfortunately, are being used by this group. It is absolutely awful. Absolutely awful.
Yeah, and it seems to be systematic. That you know, I've had guests on, like Jim Rothstein, who was the NYPD detective who investigated all this kind of stuff, human trafficking and stuff. And like, you're familiar with the story about like Boys Town and the Franklin cover up and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
See, so it seems to be systematic. They create, they actually create orphanages and institutions and this kind of stuff like that, where they could breed these kids.
And then
later on use them. It just seems it's a huge battle. We have an uphill battle against these guys.
It is.
They're just flesh and blood, yeah.
Do you know what it is? It's like the eternal story between the good and the bad, and now we're in a super modern version of it. And the good is really waking up now, and the bad is badder than it's ever been. I mean, when you look into this, the more you dig, it just goes worse and worse and blacker and blacker and more evil and evil. But at the same time, since we're living in a universe of opposites, you need left to see, be able to know what right is. You need up to be able to know what down is. And it's the same where there's this spiritual awakening, where the light is getting stronger and stronger. The black will also, it's almost like a race between the two of them. So when you look into the dark forces here, it's awful, awful, awful.
Now, I've had guests on who have told me that they believe, and I have trouble disagreeing with them, that these big events, and even like with Diane and JFK, but 9/11, that these were ritual sacrifices, occult ritual sacrifices. Do you have any kind of opinion on that?
Normally, I don't go into this area, but I can tell you that we're talking about so-called coincidences, these people that pop up, the same people popping up all over the place again and again and again at different things. One thing that also reoccurs on a regular basis is dates, very symbolic dates, and also the locations where these assassinations are carried out, which goes very much hand in hand with what you're saying about ritualistic killings. That I don't know, but there's a lot of numerology and a lot of when you look into the places where these people are killed, very often it's a former ceremonial place where people got killed, or very often as well, about a year after an assassination, they erect an obelisk in the neighborhood, somewhere within 100 yards or something like that. There's a discrete obelisk that is erected close to many of these assassinations as well. And that is a symbol of the male energy, the male power. And it's almost like, I would say, giving the rest of us the finger, because it's so obvious.
Right.
And we're so asleep that they have all of these symbols as well.
Yeah, many times there's an eternal flame as well as with Diana and JFK.
Yeah, that's a Freemasonry symbol. And in all of these, this global network we're talking about, this global elite, it is so interconnected with Freemasonry as well. And that is also one way I think they use to control their members also, because they have them to do a lot of they have all these sex parties and so on, and I bet you many of them are being filmed and recorded and so on. So if somebody starts saying that, listen, I want out or something like that, they said, fine, you can leave if you want, but this is what will happen, and all, we were going to show all of these things. So you, it was just like J. Edgar Hoover used to blackmail everybody with these type of things as well.
Where did those files go? Okay, we have with us Ole Demogord. His website is called lightonconspiracies.com. Author of Coup d'etat in slow motion. Okay, welcome back to the Opperman Report. I'm your host, Ed Opperman, private investigator and digital forensic investigator. I'm the author of the book, How to Succeed as a Private Investigator, which you can find on my website, emailrevealer.com. Remember, we're on a listener-sponsored station, so if you want to support the station and keep information like this coming out and guests like Ole Demogord coming out here and providing this information and news for you, you have to visit freedomslips.com and click on the Donate button. I also want to thank my producer, Ann, for all her hard work, and our new associate producer helping us out here, Christoph Moses, and all the work he's doing to help get this show on air for you every week. It's a lot of work. So we have today with us Ole Demogord, the author of Coup d'etat in Slow Motion, an incredible, pretty much summing up 30 years of investigative research and putting his life on the line out there, who had to leave his home country to go live out in Spain, which is not a bad place to live, but still. And you can find his book on his website there, lightonconspiracies.com, which is an excellent website. I definitely recommend it. He also has a YouTube channel called Ole Demogord, which you could find. Now, Ole, I know from the notes here that you're looking for an agent to help you book tours and talks. Do you do seminars and stuff like that, and speaking engagements, in addition to your writing work and your radio interviews?
I've started to do that, yes, but it's like, do you know when you dig into these type of areas with conspiracies and so on? I found out very early on that there are two ways to go. Either you go up big time and you get the spotlight on you as a safety precaution, or you go very, very, very discreetly, like a stealth under the radar type of thing. And for many, many years, I chose to be as discreet as possible, because at that time I was Mr. Nobody, and I would have been so easily becoming one of these people who end up in the bathtub fully dressed, drowned, or shooting myself in the back with a shotgun and committing suicide like that and so on. But lately, the last year here, it's almost exactly a year ago when I decided to get this information out there at all costs, because there was no publisher that dared to publish this book. So I put it out there for free. I set up a network and just got my book spread out as soon as possible. Within a few hours, it was all over the globe, just as a protection to get it away from me and to get the info out there. And this has created like a tidal wave of interest, and I've been on, like you mentioned before, I don't know how many radio shows these last 12 months, I have no idea. And I've had more than 60,000 hits on my website during this time as well. So now when I'm out in the spotlight, it's actually better for me. The more exposed I get, the safer it is for me as well. So I am doing talks, and I'm very open to go anywhere and do whatever I can to keep this truth getting out there. But it is such a massive job to do on my own, and so I'm looking for someone who could help me as an agent or something like that, to arrange for these things, for tours or talks or interviews or you name it, because I also have a family to feed at the same time, so I need to focus on normal kind of work to get the money in for them. So it is very hard for me to focus on what is really the important one. So if anybody wants to step forward, I'm extremely grateful. Also for context when it comes to making high quality documentaries, because one way I really would like to lift this to the next level is to make a super documentary, especially about the Operation 40 and how that group connects all of these big events that has shaped our world in such an incredible way, and where most of us have absolutely no idea what really happened. The same also with my book. I've got several books, and a few of them I really would like to get on the cinema screen, the movie screen. So any type of contacts there, especially I'm been trying to get in touch with Clint Eastwood to make a film on my book, Shadow of Tears, which is a story about how I went on a bicycle from Sweden. I was aiming to go to South Africa, but instead I ended up in Iran during the Iran-Iraq War, 1984, and well, lots of things happened. It's a true story, this book. You can find it on my website as well. And in the end, I ended up with helping to smuggle up people from Tehran through former Russia and East Germany up to Sweden, and where they're living happily today. And so I also do seminars when it comes to more on the mental level, Raja Yoga, and how to cope with, how to deal with these things, how to be able to stay in focus and love, in tranquility, even though the world around you is totally crazy and so on. So I'll be most happy to do anything I can to spread this. It's just like we're talking about Bob Marley here before, and he was a beautiful man. I think he said once that I'm a very simple man with a very simple wish. I just want to unite mankind. And this is something extremely beautiful and important to me. So if I can do anything to join in doing that and accomplish that, I'm right there.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm struggling with the same things, like just getting the guest book, and I do appearances as well for my work. Mostly mainstream media, they don't like to talk to me about this kind of stuff. They like to keep this stuff quiet. And just getting your appearances booked and scheduled, and vice versa, and scheduling guests is a full-time job. And now you're seeking donations for that on your website, Light on Conspiracy. .com. Yeah.
That name of the web is not just any name. It really symbolizes what it is I'm trying. I'm trying to go in like a flashlight in very dark corners and just lift the whole energy, light it up, and lighten the whole situation up so that the world will transform into the place it's meant to be. Like you say, this thing with donations, I know many people are struggling. And I just say that it is so incredibly appreciated if somebody wants to support me, because it is almost impossible to do this without help. And I've been doing this for 30 years with no support at all. And so lately people have started discovering who I am, and I'm getting some help there. But like I say, extremely appreciated.
Yeah, or just buy the book. You know,
buy the book.
Yeah, buy the book and support the author and his work. 30 years of research.
And I've just signed a deal with a book company called Dandelion Books in Arizona. It's a small company, but they're the first ones who had the guts to take a step forward. And so the book will be printed and on Amazon and other major online websites within a few weeks.
Yeah, it is tough getting a publisher when you're dealing with these kind of topics, because they don't want to touch it, because the same people that are behind these things also own the publishing companies.
And
if you look, whenever you can tell who they want to put up for president, because someone like Colin Powell or Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, right before they'll get a big giant book deal, $7 million, and then they go on a book tour where they're on every station and every news station, every media outlet in the country for a year prior to announcing for president. So they got their act together. You know, they got the drugs down, they got the pedophilia down, they got the blackmail down. It's a very organized group. You got to give them credit for that.
It really is incredible when you think of it, because like, once you start seeing, for instance, who this Bill Clinton is, his background, where he was he was a local. He was the governor of Arkansas.
Sorry? He was a prosecutor before that.
Yeah, yeah. And then when this whole thing with the Iran-Contras, when they started pumping in the drugs into the American society through these big military planes that was flown, one of their major pilots was a man by Barry Seal, who was also connected to Operation 40, who was also, he was just about to go live and testify against George Herbert Walker Bush when he was assassinated just a few weeks before the Swedish Prime Minister was assassinated, who was also involved in this international arms deals. But Bill Clinton was actually the person, together with his partner Dan Lasseter, who received these drugs and helped to distribute them in the States, going to L.A., to the Cribs and other people, all the time making billions and with the aim of destabilizing the American society so that there would be more and more crimes, so that there would be more and more cry out for a more militant and powerful police force and so on and so on and so on. And then there's one thing I just wanted to mention that most people don't know. Do you remember the Oklahoma City bomb, right?
Sure.
And just when this is one of these inside jobs again. I'm sure most of your listeners are aware of it. But what happened was that after the explosion, there were lots of people came running, you know, trying to help the people who had survived or were still in all the rubble and screaming and so on. And then suddenly there was a warning shouted out that there are secondary bombs. Please leave the area. There are secondary bombs, secondary bombs. So everybody had to back off a few hundred meters. And what happened was that there were two or three vans coming with men in blue overalls. And what they did, they drove up to the building that had almost collapsed. And what they did was, out of the rubble, they got these cabinet files, you know, office furnitures with lots of files in it, and filled the vans with those. And then once that was done, they took off and left the area. But and then people could go back and try and save whoever was surviving. But the evidence that was taken away from the crime scene, these documents, had just arrived from MENA, Arkansas, and these were files in a case against Bill and Hillary Clinton in the White River scandal. It had been moved from MENA, Arkansas, to that exact building, the Alfred Murray building. So, once again, if this does not show that there's an involvement, I mean, who... Do you see what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. I see what you're saying.
And then you have all of these murders and suicides around. If you follow Bill Clinton's his career and so on, and Hillary and so on, it's like when you look at these people, you have to see them with different eyes because they are super criminals, and they are not there for the people. They are there to totally take advantage of us and destroy everything, you know. So these things with book deals and book tours and interviews and I don't know what they get away with, but it's absolutely incredible, you know, and incredible that we buy it and that we let them get away with it. I don't understand it at all.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. You know, I really don't. But then again, even guys like you and me, who have this kind of analytical, critical thinking, and we can do research and investigate, I'm sure that both of us are under our own level of mind control and distraction and brainwashing that we don't realize. You know what I mean? And I'm sure there's plenty of things that are going on right in front of my face, people in my life that are manipulating me and directing me, handling me, and I don't realize it. I can almost guarantee it.
Sounds like your wife.
I wish. My ex-wife. Get rid of her. But,
No, but
how do you manage doing this with a family, too? Do you have a family?
Yeah, I have indeed.
Yeah.
It's like, it's hard for people who dig into this because it's such a dark area and it's hard just doing it on your own. But if you have a family, then they get dragged down. And for quite a few years, it was very hard on my family until I changed the approach. And the approach is that I just, the reason why I go out there is to lift, you know, and and expose these things to heal instead of just, there's so many doom and gloom people in this area, I think, that are just pointing out, saying it's awful, it's evil, it's horrible, it's the world will end. But I mean, who needs that? I don't need that.
Okay, let me hit you with that now. Because we were saying before about how, okay, people are waking up, people are waking up, people are waking up. And in some ways, I think they are. But then again, you'll have in the same group of awakened and aware community, Comet Ison's going to crash on our heads and blow up. The end of the world is every freaking week, and I'm getting sick and tired of hearing it. That a meteor is going to hit us, or there's going to be FEMA camps or whatever, but there's all this kind of fear porn, doom and gloom. Now, how do we separate ourselves from that and get back to nuts and bolts here?
There's only one person you can change. That's true. The one in the mirror, you know. And live by example. Don't try and change anyone. Don't try and wake anyone up. You know, it's very painful for many people to wake up, so you can't force them. So the only way is to live by example, lift yourself, lift people around you, expose, but still with the energy upwards all the time, lift the energy. Because also the lower you are in energy, the easier it is for you to be controlled. And this is why they try to push us down all the time with all this awful media. It's just black, scary, awful, you know, to get you depressed, get your energies down. But you know, like if you have a laboratory and if you look at energies, because everything in the universe is energy, if you look at it under in a special, what do you call it? I don't know.
Microscope.
Exactly. For atom microscopes, you can see that everything is, even things that look solid, when you get very close to it, they're actually vibrating. It's just energy. And the lowest form of energy is pure fear. That is so low. Real terror is like woo, 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 woo. And then you got the highest form of energy. That is what is called love. That we've named it love, but that is a super, super sonic high energy. And if you take a low and a high energy and let them meet in a laboratory, they don't meet and start fighting in the middle. What happens is that the lower energy totally annuls. When the high energy comes in, boom, the low energy just disappears. And this, I think, is the reason why they try to keep us way down in energy, fearful, because that's where they can control us. But if we lift ourselves, and the way to do that is by filling our heart with, I know this sounds like New Age, wee you, wee you, wee you, but it's not, I'm telling you. If you fill yourself with love, if you fill yourself with gratitude, if you fill yourself with all these beautiful feelings, your energy rises and rises. And then slowly but surely you will start attracting things on the same level, because this is a universe as well of magnetism, like attracts like. So the more we can lift ourselves, the more we can raise the energy, then the more beautiful things we'll start attracting into our lives, instead of buying into what they try to get us to buy into. So turn off the TV. That is one of the major tools. Stop reading newspapers saying it's awful, it's you're going under, all of these things. It is not important at this point to inform yourself about awful things, I would say. Focus on lifting yourself. And the best way of lifting yourself is, and the best way of getting out of so-called depression, by the way, depression is the disease of me, my problems, me. The way to get out of that is to reach out a hand and start helping people around you. When you help someone, you feel better, they feel better. People who see you help them, they feel better. So it starts racing. So just go out there, do good, help people around you. There's always somebody who needs it. If it's not somebody who actually needs help, then find someone who feels alone or depressed or something like that, and just lift them. And then together, I saw this beautiful YouTube clip about how a movement is created. And there's this, I think it's a rock concert or something, like somebody's just filming it. And people are sitting on a grassy knoll, a slope like that. And suddenly one guy gets up and throws off his shirt and starts dancing all crazy. I mean, it looks totally stupid, but he's so happy. He's just dancing away, not caring about anything. everybody's sitting around pointing at him, saying like, look at that weirdo, look at that crazy guy. Then after about a minute or so, another guy goes up and start dancing really crazy next to him. And the first guy just welcomes him and says, yeah, yeah, yeah. So both of them are making an absolute ass of themselves, but enjoying themselves. Then a third guy comes, then a fourth, then a fifth, and suddenly, boom, all of them are dancing, because suddenly the ones being outside are the ones looking, you know. Suddenly it's the ones that are sitting down that are the outsiders. And so from one crazy guy, within 4 minutes, the whole place is dancing. And I think this is how a movement is created. It's not the first guy that looks crazy. It's actually the most important are the second and third ones, and the first one welcoming him. And just, you know, don't be afraid. Do it, do it, do it. Let go. And like you said about these police officers and so on, caring about their financial situation and their mortgages and all of that, I can totally understand that. But we are at a point where it's beyond that. You know, we will go under if we don't change this. We will. The world they are trying to create for us is an awful, awful place. The agenda is the Fourth Reich. You look at what Hitler was trying to accomplish. The same power elite were behind him, are behind what's going on now. And you can see so many similarities in your countries, in your country, about what happened in Nazi Germany is happening in the States at the moment. I tell you, if you look at it, scary, scary. So it's time to wake up. This is not a time to sit and pick your navel and stand up, you know, really stand up and wake up.
So, yeah, we're down to like 4 minutes. You're saying that we should talk to our friends, talk to our neighbors, turn the TV off, turn the music off, because the music nowadays, the popular music, is just as bad as sometimes worse, and the music videos that go along with it. And encourage each other. And what do you think about this new medium of the talk radio shows and the internet radio shows? Do you see a lot of progress from your work on the radio? Are you seeing any results?
I have absolutely no idea. But this is the beauty of radio, yeah. Isn't it? I mean, I have no idea. Is it you and me, Ed, who's sitting talking to each other, or are there any people listening in? I have no idea. But what I do find out is that I get all of these beautiful messages from all over the place. So apparently people are listening in and people are waking up. And one of the most rewarding thing is that I get, emails and things saying that, my God, I'm starting to believe in humanity again. I've stopped thinking of revenge or hatred. Now I just want to help to do my part in lifting this world and so on. This is the reward. And this is the reason I'm taking these risks as well, because this is such a beautiful world, and it's worth to do everything we can to save it. And I'm totally convinced that we are going to save it. But there is this cancer growth, and it will kill the body if we do not expose it, so that the body can heal itself. We will die. You know, their agenda is brutal. So, like I say, and this is a time where it's coming to a peak, you know, these two forces, the dark and the light, are meeting now. And this is a super, super, super time to be alive. It's the best time to be alive ever, because we are the one front line who will experience this thing when it goes into the next stage, which is going to be a beautiful, beautiful place to be.
And you can hear the end of the show. Well, so this is thank you, Oli. Thank you so much. Oli Demogord, his book is Coup d'etat in slow motion. His website is lightonconspiracies.com. Please go to lightonconspiracies.com and subscribe, and also donate to Oli, who's doing a lot of good work for us out here and putting himself on the line. Thank you, Oli.
You're most welcome.